Welcome to Love's Tender Flame. Tales of Romance. I'm Mardell, reading The Auction Block by Rex Beach. Chapter 5. One of the minor readjustments forced upon the Knight family by the nature of Lorelei's work was that of meal hours. Peter, from long custom of early rising in the country, insisted upon his breakfast at 7, and in spite of his inaction, demanding dinner at noon and supper at 6. Jim, being erratic in habit, exacted his meals at any hour that suited his appetite, while Mrs. Knight, now that she had a housemaid, ate with first one, then another. But no matter how chaotic the general household schedule, Lorelei was always assured of 10 hours sleep, a dainty breakfast upon rising, and a substantial meal before theater time. Her mother saw to it that this program was religiously adhered to. At whatever hour of the night Lorelei might come in, no sound was ever allowed to disturb her until she arose. Irrespective also of her careless disregard of social appointments, she was never permitted to miss one with the hairdresser, the manicure, the masseuse, or the dozen and one other beauty specialists who form as important an adjunct to the stage woman's career as to that of the woman of fashion. All this was a vital part of that plan to which the mother had devoted herself. She attended the girl's health and good looks with a devout singleness of purpose that would have been admirable in a better cause. No racehorse on the eve of a derby was groomed more carefully than this budding woman. In preparing her for masculine conquest, the entire family took a hand. Her prospects, her actions, her triumphs were the main topic of conversation. All other interests were subordinated to the matrimonial quest upon which she had embarked. The men she met were investigated, discussed, speculated upon, until their every characteristic was worn threadbare. The domestic arrangements that resulted were, of necessity, unhappy, for the housework was allowed to take care of itself. The male members shifted as best they could, and the home was forever in slovenly confusion. Nevertheless, the existing condition of affairs met the approval of all, and the three conspirators lived in a constant state of eager expectation over Lorelei's fortunes. Mother and daughter were loitering over a midday breakfast, and Lorelei, according to custom, was recounting the incidents of the previous evening. "It's too bad you quarreled with Mr. Wharton," Mrs. Knight commented when she heard the full story of Hammond's party. "He'll dislike you now." The girl shrugged daintily. "He was drunk and fresh. I can't bear a man in such condition."
"But he's terribly rich, and he's an only son. He'll inherit everything. Is he nice looking?"
Yes.
"You shouldn't antagonize a man like him, my dear. He's single at least, and naturally he's impulsive, like all those young millionaires. They have so many girls to choose from, you know. Young Powell, who married Norma Gale, was the same sort. She was twice his age, but he married her just the same, and his people made a fine settlement to get rid of her. She was tough, too. Mrs. Wharton is a great club woman and the head of thousands of charities."
"That's no sign she's charitable."
"You can't tell. She might take you right into the family."
"Bob is an alcoholic. He's no good, so Mr. Merkle said."
Jim, who was immersed in the morning paper, spoke from his chair near the window.
"Oh, I know you go after Merkle himself, sis. Easy picking, these bankers." Jim also had come home in the still hours of the night before, and had but lately made his breakfast on a cup of coffee, 3 cigarettes, and the racing sheet of the Morning Telegraph. He wore his pajama jacket over a silk undershirt, and was now resting, preparatory to his daily battle with the world. Just how the struggle went, or where it was waged, the others knew not at all. His mother shook her head.
"Those old men are all alike. Mr. Hammond will never marry Lilas."
"Is that so?" James abandoned his reading. "The older they are, the softer they get. Take it from me on the word of a volunteer fireman. Lilas will cash in on him quicker than you think. I know."
"How do you know?" inquired his sister.
"Never mind how. Maybe I've got second sight. Anyhow, the info is right. Hammond's in the game bag."
"It told you."
"Maybe I got it in the dog-eared dope," mocked the brother. "Maybe Max Melcher told me. Anyhow, you could land Merkel just as easy if you'd declare Max in."
"Now, Jim," protested Mrs. Knight, "I won't let you put such ideas into her head. You and that gang of yours are full of tricks. But Lorelei's decent, and she's going to stay decent. You'd get everybody in jail or in the newspapers."
"Has Maxie ever been in jail? Has Tony the barber? Nah, you bet they haven't, and they never will be. This jail talk is funny. Just wait and see how easy Lilas gets hers. Of course, if Lorelei could marry Wharton, well, that would be different. But he's no sucker."
"How is Lilas going to get hers?" insisted Lorelei.
"Wait and see." James returned to his paper.
"She'll never marry him. She hates him."
Jim laughed, and his sister broke out irritably.
"Why be so mysterious? Anybody would think you'd robbed a bank."
Jim looked up again, and this time with a scowl. "Well, every time I come through with a suggestion, Ma crabs it. What's the use talking to a pair of haymakers like you, anyhow? I could grab a lot of coin for us if you'd let me. Why, Maxie's been after me 12 times about you, but I knew you wouldn't stand for it."
"Blackmail, eh?"
Jim was highly disgusted. "What's the difference how you pronounce it? It spells K-A-L-E, and it takes a good-looking girl to pull off a deal in this town. When Lilas lands Hammond, she'll be through with the show business for good. The Kaiser suite on the Imperator for hers."
Lorelei flung aside her napkin with an exclamation.
"Oh, that's wrong now," demanded Jim. "Sore again because I offer to make a few pennies for you? All right, a play for Bob Wharton. I'd like to meet him, though. He can do me a lot of good."
"How?"
"Well, he dropped 8,400 in Hebling 6th Avenue joint the other night. Maxie owns a place on 46th Street where the sky's the limit."
His sister was staring at him curiously. She had voiced misgivings concerning his activities of late, but Jim had never satisfied her inquiries. Now she asked,
"What is your share?"
The young man laughed a little uncomfortably.
40%, that's usual. If he's going to gamble somewhere, I might as well be in on it."
Lorelei turned to her mother, but Mrs. Knight seemed puzzled at this turn of the conversation. The girl's next words, however, left no doubt as to her feelings.
"You're a fine specimen, aren't you?"
Her lip curled. Mother and son started at the bitterness of her tone.
"You're in a fine business, too, blackmailing with Tony the Barber's crowd and capping for a Jenny."
"Who said anything about a Jenny?"
"Oh, what a mess you've made of things. 2 years ago, we were decent and... now..."
Lorelei's voice broke, her eyes filmed over with tears.
"I'd give anything in the world if we were all back in Vale."
It took only 2 years of this city to spoil us.
Never mind the dramatics, Jim growled. What's your kick? You're on Broadway, ain't you?
Yes, with a 6-room flat on Amsterdam Avenue. Pa is a cripple, you're a crook, and I'm...
The mother broke in sharply.
Jim is no crook. You've no right to talk like this after all we've done for you.
Sure, why did we come to New York anyhow? Echoed the young man. What brought us here? Ain't you having the time of your life? Parties, presents, joy rides, every day? Gee, I wish I made the coin you do.
I hate it.
Heh, better try Vail again. You'd end in a straitjacket if you did. You'd think you could go back, but you couldn't. Nobody can, after they've had a taste of the city.
It's all wrong. The whole thing is rotten. Sometimes I hate myself.
Lorelei choked. Mrs. Knight spoke reprovingly.
Don't be silly, dear. You know we did it all for you. Peter didn't want to leave home, and Jim had a good job, but we gave up everything to let you have your chance. Yes, and we've all worked for you every minute since. Do you think I like this stuffy flat after that other house with the yard and the trees and the sunshine? Peter lies in his room here day in and day out and never has a moment's comfort or pleasure. I don't know a soul. I haven't a friend or a neighbor. But we're not complaining.
Mrs. Knight put added feeling into her words.
We don't want you to live the way we've had to live. We want you to be rich and to have things. After all we've done, after all poor Peter has suffered.
Don't, cried the girl falteringly. I think of him every hour.
He isn't the sort that complains. I consider it very thoughtless of you to behave as you do and make it harder for us.
Mrs. Knight sniffed and wiped her eyes, whereupon Lorelei went to her and hid her face upon her mother's shoulder.
I don't want to be unkind, she murmured, but sometimes I'm sick with disgust. And then again, I'm frightened. Where are we heading? What's going to become of us, of me? That man last night, there was something in his face. Something in the way he held me, just as if I were his for the taking. It isn't the first time I've seen it, either. All the men I meet are beasts. That whole party was sordid and mean. Old men drinking with girls and pawing them over. Mr. Merkel was the only nice one there.
The mother was dismayed to feel her daughter shiver.
Good Lord, you people make me sick, cried Jim, rising and making for his room. Anybody think you'd been insulted?
When he had gone, Mrs. Knight asked accusingly, Lorelei, are you in love?
No, why?
You've said some queer things lately. You've worried me. I hope you'll never be tempted to do anything so... to be foolish. Now just look at the girls who have made silly matches. They all go back to work. You can't be too careful with the men you meet, for you're so beautiful that they'll promise you anything, or pretend to be everything they aren't. I don't intend to let you make a mess of things by marrying some chorus man. When the right person comes along, you'll accept him, then you'll never have to worry again. But you must be careful.
Do you think I'd be happy with a man like Mr. Wharton?
Why not? You'd at least be rich. And if rich people can't be happy, who can? If you accepted some poor boy, he'd probably turn out to be a drunkard and a loafer just like Wharton is now. She sighed. I'd like to see you settled. We could take Peter to a specialist, and maybe he could be cured. The doctor says there is a chance, but it would take a world of money.
I'll get the money.
How?
Somehow, if you'd let me economize on clothes.
and if Jim would help a little, we could save enough.
Jim has all he can do to take care of himself. I'm sure I don't know how he manages. And you've got to keep up appearances. No, Peter will have to wait until you're married. Only I did hope when you told me about Robert Wharton that he might be the one. We could go abroad and get the help of those German surgeons. I've always wanted to travel.
When Lorelei reached the theater that evening, she found Lilas Lynn entertaining a caller who had been more than once in her thoughts during the day. Jim's reference to Max Melcher had recalled Mr. Merkel's earnest words of the previous night. And although her brother had implied that Melcher was engineering the affair between Lilas and the steel man, Lorelei could not bring herself to take the statement seriously. It was too absurd. She could not imagine how such a thing could be managed by a third person, or how he could profit by it. Her stage experience had acquainted her with several intrigues, in which the men's names were nearly as prominent as Hammond's, but in no case had anything more serious than gossip eventuated. A number of such attachments had resulted in happy marriages, although at the price of an occasional divorce. She remembered, now that she thought of it, that Merkel had mentioned the probability of that very thing in this instance. She began to doubt the banker's unselfishness and to question his motives, arguing, as she had done at first, that even if Hammond were really in danger, it was no business of hers. This lesson of non-interference in the affairs of others she had learned during her recent life, spent in an atmosphere not so much immoral as unmoral. For 2 years she had moved in a world where matters, the mere mention of which would not have been tolerated in Vale, were openly discussed. These topics were treated frankly, moreover, with a wise cynicism, which in Lorelei's case had proven protective. Gratuitous advice, however, was seldom welcomed, and a policy of hands-off prevailed. Miss Lynn's visitor was a well-tailored man who gave a first impression of extreme physical neatness. He was immaculate in attire, his skin was fine, his color fresh, a pair of small, imperturbable eyes were set in a smiling face beneath a prematurely gray head. Max Melcher was a figure on Broadway. He had the entree to all the stage doors. He frequented the popular cafes, where he surrounded himself with men, always affable, usually at leisure, invariably obliging. He had many friends. At Lorelei's entrance, he smiled and nodded without rising, then continued his earnest conversation with Miss Lynn. None of their words were audible to the last comer, until Melcher rose to leave. Then Lilas halted him with a nervous laugh, saying,
"Remember, if it doesn't go, it's a joke, and I run to cover."
"It will go," he told her quietly as he strolled out.
"What are you two planning?" inquired Lorelei.
"Nothing. Max drops in regularly. He used to be sweet on me."
Lilas completed her makeup, then fidgeted nervously.
"Gee," she presently exclaimed, "I'm tired of this business. We're fools to stay in it. Think of Atlantic City on a night like this. Or the mountains. This heat has completely unstrung me."
She rummaged through the confusion on her table, then inquired of the dresser,
"Croft, where are my white gloves?"
"They haven't come back from the cleaners," Mrs. Croft answered.
"Not back? Then you didn't send them when I told you. You're getting altogether too shiftless, Croft. When I tell you to do a thing, I want it done."
"I sent all 6 pairs.
"You did nothing of the sort."
"Oh, Miss Lynn, I hope I dropped dead if—"
"Don't talk back to me. You always have an excuse, haven't you?"
Lilas's voice was strident. Her face was dark with sudden anger.
"I've a notion to box your ears."
Lorelei broke in reprovingly.
"Lilas, Croft is old enough to be your mother.
Yes, and she's old enough to have some sense, but she hasn't got it.
I hope I drop dead if...
I hope you do, snapped the indignant girl. I told you to attend to them. Now I've nothing but soiled ones.
The dresser began to weep silently. She was a small, timid old woman, upon whose manifest need of employment Lorelei had taken pity some time before. Her forgetfulness had long been a trial to both her employers.
"That's right. Turn on the floodgates," mocked Lilas. "You stop that snivelling, or I'll give you something to cry for. I'm nervous enough tonight without having you in hysterics. Remember, if anything happens again, you'll go, and you'll take something with you to think about."
Seizing the cleanest pair of gloves at hand, she flung out of the room in a fine fury.
You won't let her fire me? I need work. I do, quavered Mrs. Croft.
Now, don't mind her temper, but you really ought to see to her gloves when...
I hope I drop dead this minute if I didn't send him out the very day she told me.
Croft, you're fibbing. You know Lilas is excitable.
Excitable? Croft wiped her eyes with the corner of her apron. Is that what you call it? However can you bear her, I don't see, and you a nice girl. She won't do you no good, Miss Knight.
Oh, pshaw, she was just nervous.
I should think she would be. I'd be glad if her millionaire takes her out of the business like she thinks he will. Poor man, he's laying up trouble for himself. That he is. She'll land him in the divorce courts with her flashlight photographs.
Lorelei swung round from her mirror.
What do you mean?
Oh, I heard her and that Jew.
I beg pardon, Miss Knight. You ain't a Jew, are you?
What about the flashlights?
Well, there's so many Hebrew girls in the profession. Not that I don't like 'em, you understand.
Go on.
Well, I heard enough to know she's up to some deviltry, her and that Maxie Melcher. They've got a photographer and witnesses. Your brother's one of 'em.
Jim? What?
It's true. It's a bad crowd Mr. Jim's in with. And there's something big in the air. Millions it is. And her saying she'll box my ears, the hussy. I've heard him talking before tonight.
Tell me everything, Croft. Quickly.
I have, only you better warn your brother.
The assistant stage manager thrust his head through the curtain, shouting,
"Your cue, Miss Knight. What the devil?"
With a gasp, Lorelei leapt to her feet and fled from the room. Mrs. Croft shook her head mournfully, snuffled a few times, then scowled at the disarray Lilas had left behind. She breathed a feeble malediction upon the cause of it, seized a hatpin, and holding it like a dagger, thrust it viciously into first one, then another of the gowns hanging on their hooks.
"I wish you was in 'em,"
the little old woman exclaimed. She replaced the pin, then surreptitiously removed some expensive cologne from a large bottle, transferring the perfume to a smaller bottle, which she took from her pocket, dabbed her nose with Lilas powder puff, and began laying out her enemy's next change of costume. Lorelei had left a handful of silver carelessly exposed, and discovering this, Mrs. Croft counted it. The pile was sufficiently large to reassure her, so she abstracted 2 quarters. Then, in an excess of caution, returned 1 coin and took a dime in its place.
Join me next time for another romantic chapter of The Auction Block by Rex Beach, here on Love's Tender Flame. Until then, love deeply and live beautifully.